Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Doug Show. My name's Doug Cunnington, and today I'm pretty pumped. This is an interesting conversation we're going to have. So I'm going to be chatting with Phil Birchenall, and he does a few things. Like generally, he's a business consultant, and he works with digital and media companies in the UK, advising, training, and consulting. He spends about half his time or so around AI training and speaking and getting involved in projects that help inspire people around AI and what you can do. I didn't know Phil before a couple weeks ago. He was featured on Forbes and Phil mentioned me in one of my videos. So Phil, thanks a lot because they actually linked to my video, which was a shock. And I just saw it pop up and I was like, is this a real thing? And it was. So we're going to get into some of the details. We're going to talk AI. And the feature in Forbes was about some ChatGPT prompts to help your daughter, Daisy, right? So can you tell us a little bit about that, Phil?
I can, yeah. And thanks, Doug. I've got goosebumps because it's one of those amazing conversations that happens because of this stuff, right? It's just properly cool. So it's great to be on. Thank you. So what it was, my daughter is Daisy. She's a bright kid. I'm not just saying that because she's downstairs, but she's a bright kid. And about a year ago, I don't know how you, do you have the SATs in Canada? Like it's a set of tests that kids do in year six. Have I said that right? I always get these things confused. At the end of their sort of primary school education to assess how they've got on as they prepare for high school, effectively. And she was doing really well in all of her mocks, except for maths. And this sort of coincided with me. I've been fascinated by AI for quite a few years. I'd been experimenting with ChatGPT 3.5 when it dropped. And then this whole thing about Daisy's maths coincided with ChatGPT 4 arriving. So before I even thought about using AI with this, I did the dad thing of, it can't be that hard, this stuff. Like, how can maths be that hard? I did it years ago. Like, I'll just work out the problem areas and we'll buy a revision book. And Daisy and me will sit down on the kitchen table and go through all this stuff. Yeah. And I don't know if you've seen the film The Incredibles 2, but there's a bit in it where Mr. Incredible is in exactly that position with his son. And he's trying to sort of explain how maths works in his head. And his son is getting completely bewildered because obviously it's completely different how it's done now. I had exactly that same moment. And you kind of think, my God, I'm a bit of a failure here. Like, I don't get called in to try and help on school stuff that often, right? So, and you think, I can't. So anyway, with ChatGPT 4 coming out, I was really, like, I've been doing some interesting things with it. And I'd got a bit of, I mean, this is literally in the first couple of weeks of GPT-4 being out, and I'd read that you could get it to take on certain roles, and in my weird random head I was like, I wonder if I could sort of make it be an AI maths tutor. And I went, if I fed in all of this stuff about, you know, the problem areas that she'd got, like long division, multiplying fractions, cube numbers. So that was my sort of thought, my initial thought process. That was sort of late in the day, one day, a year and a month ago. And I got, you know, I spent the evening trying to work out how this would come together. And it was kind of by digging around online that I found your channel. And you'd done, because I'd seen you could get ChatGPT to take on these roles, but I didn't have a clue how you might approach that. And I found one of your videos where you talked about, basically, there was two sides to it that really sort of were spot on. One, that you'd sort of created a prompt generator so that you could sort of give ChatGPT a relatively short amount of information to start off and get it to generate a really detailed prompt for you to then iterate. So there was that, but also how you were using it. So I think from the examples, I can't remember exactly, but some of the examples that you were using were forcing it to act as a, in a particular role. I think it was like training or what have you. So I found that video, followed what you'd said, and did this whole thing where I kind of took that prompt, then started, or the prompt generator, then I started feeding in the information about Daisy, about the problems she was having, that she was 11, she's in the UK, that she's got these challenges with maths. And then I said, by the way, she loves a laugh. She loves having a joke and she loves dogs. And this was relatively late into the evening by this point, Doug, but she came back from school the next day. I said, I've done this thing. She already knew about ChatGPT because we'd been working together on little things. And I said, I've used ChatGPT. I've not run this, but I've used this stuff that I've learned online. Should we give it a go? And we ran it and it blew me away. It blew me away. And it, I mean, I could go on and we've got more to talk about, but it literally took everything from that initial prompt generator stuff that you'd sort of given me inspiration on to all of this extra context about, you know, her particular situation. I've got the screen cap somewhere, but it basically starts off with a joke and then it starts off then describing long division as it's done in the UK in the SATs exams. And it just worked beautifully. And that was the moment going through that process that evening where it really hit me how powerful this stuff was. So thank you. It just gave me that steer and it was an amazing sort of eye opener to what we all of a sudden had our fingers on.
Okay. Awesome. You're welcome. And I think, just to set the context for folks, I mean, like all of us trying to learn AI, like we'll watch some other channel, we'll read some stuff, we'll see what someone does, and then we'll emulate it, and then we'll add layers on top. Maybe we'll pick a few people, and then we'll add multiple layers. So I'm sure I saw like specific things done. And then it was like, hey, you could do this. Let's take it a step further. And just as a quick, you know, there's a lot of side hustlers or entrepreneurs out there in the audience. So maybe you're like, I want to get business coaching from Tim Ferriss or something like that. There's a huge amount of content that the AI tools have been trained on from Tim Ferriss. So you could basically get coaching like, hey, what would Tim Ferriss ask me about this? Like, where are holes? And then again, you could make it any expert you want, whether it's math or Tim Ferriss or business or relationship coaching or whatever, and just go from there. So that's awesome. Now, what was the situation like getting contacted by Forbes, or how did you get hooked up with them? Because it's obviously a big publication and a lot of people are thinking like, how on earth did someone get, you know, I mean, this is a story that we've seen a lot of times, like a lot of people have done it, although mainstream is not big, but in our little world, a lot of people are like, I've done this like 100 times over, who cares?
Yeah.
So how'd you get in there?
Yeah. Well, another sort of set of happenstance, you know, lots of things that converged together. It was basically through a guy that I know who, in a very similar way, has majored on AI in the last 12 months. Came from a tech background in education, but then really majored on AI because he saw the potential. So a big shout out to the guy that, well, he now writes for Forbes as one of his many roles, but it's a guy called Dan Fitzpatrick, who's based in the northeast of England and really has become, you know, the go-to person in education and AI. So he's again, layers on layers. So yeah, we started working on a project that didn't come together about 2 years ago. So I had this project idea that was kind of really great, but for whatever reason, didn't come together. And we kept that dialogue going. And we both hit the AI thing at the same time. And he's going, isn't this incredible for education? And I'm going, isn't this incredible for business? So we, like, you know, it was one of those things. So when I did the AI maths tutor, the first person I sent it to was Dan, because I knew he'd be as wide-eyed about it as me, because I knew he was out there talking to educators. And so that whole thing, and, you know, he got the contract to work with Forbes, and was just about, he was kind of going back through the conversations he's had over the last 12 months about who was doing what. And, you know, God bless him, he picked up the AI master. And I think the thing was, Doug, is because it's so relatable. I mean, there's no, like you said, there's no magic in it. There's nothing incredible about what I've done there, but that's the incredible thing. You know, it's just about imagination and looking at a problem and being able to see that with a certain set of actions, you can create a solution that you wouldn't have been able to do without that. So I think Dan really liked it as a story, because it you know, it's relatable content, and we all love relatable content. It's, I mean, literally, the article got published. It's had something like 25,000 page views, the story. Like, loads of people have shared it. And you know what, the most, other than me and you meeting up and doing this, having this conversation, which is incredible, but the amazing thing is that the amount of people that have kind of shared it on, like, LinkedIn and said, I've tried this now, following this article, I've tried it, or I've tried something similar. That's the exciting thing for me, mm-hmm. that people feel inspired to get on and, you know, how could I apply that in the same way that your video inspired me to go, I can put that information to use in this situation. And then hopefully it's done the same, you know, with you know, and that's, you know, I think that's really exciting. But that's where we're at with technology, isn't it? With AI, it's giving us these things. We're all playing catch up with the possibilities.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was it through my good pal Dan Fitzpatrick, who,
okay,
is very cool.
It's the old fashioned way. You have the inside track. Like, it's hard to recreate. You have to be a friend and work on something for 2 or 3 years, and then
the opportunity comes through. And yeah, exactly that. But I think it's the right timing, you know, because you know, that sort of put it to the kind of audience that Forbes allowed it.
The other observation is, because it is normal, again, we're in our own little weird bubble of marketing and business and entrepreneurship and AI. Yep. So we see things for like 18 months and then it becomes more mainstream. Yep. But it's so normal and regular that people before were like, I don't know what I'm going to do with AI, but now you've given them an application that is really applicable for, you know, standardized tests, basically, is what you're talking about. We have a different version.
Yeah.
But basically, people can see that it is useful on a real day-to-day basis. Now, let's shift gears. So that was, you know, GPT 3.5 and then 4.0, and we've seen incremental gains. We have GPT 4.0 at the time that we're recording this. It's like pretty fresh. Things are rolling out. So what excited you most with some of the updates? Because there's some pretty groundbreaking stuff, and I'll leave it kind of open, but if you can bullet point it out before you go deep on any of them.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think the big, well, apart from the Scarlett Johansson thing, which everyone will have read about, this is the thing, isn't it? The headline is Scarlett Johansson. So if people don't know, one of the preset voices on the update, even on the previous version of this, is modeled similar to Scarlett Johansson, and that's, you know, obviously problematic, so we're not going to go there. But beyond the headline, what's incredible, there's quite a few things, right? One is the voice conversation stuff. Now, the last version of ChatGPT, ChatGPT 4, sort of 6 months into the update, maybe October, November last year. My God, this all is so quick, isn't it? They already updated the paid model with an incredible voice conversation feature, which can be, it's pretty sucky today. I've been using it for something and it's been absolutely terrible, but there's some outage, I think. But day to day, it's really cool. It's worlds apart from the, I'm not going to say them, but because lots of devices in my house will start pinging, but the Apple and the Amazon voice activated speakers. So already the voice functionality on this stuff was pretty cool. But if you dig around on the OpenAI website, there's some demo videos where the emotion and the ability to take on, again, different voices, not necessarily different voices, but different styles of delivery. So there's things like, hey, speak like a sports presenter, or talk like a robot, or it just starts to feel incredibly lifelike. It goes beyond what it was already. This is with GPT-4.0 for Omni, into this sort of thing where you feel like you are pretty much. I mean, some of the videos, there's one on the OpenAI website where, sorry, the other concurrent thing, because this stuff is now multimodal, so it'll take input from audio and video and text all at the same time. So a couple of the videos demonstrate that. So there's one that I think is really good. It's sort of buried, but the one I think that just shows you exactly all of this stuff beautifully together. There's a guy that brings on a little puppy and he's got his phone in front of him. The phone has got obviously ChatGPT 4.0 running. It sees the puppy and the guy says, hey, I want to introduce you to someone. And he puts the puppy in front of the camera. And then the voice goes, and I'm not going to do this here because I'll embarrass myself, but it sort of goes, hey, wow, look at this little cutie. Da, da, da. And it brings on a ball. And, oh, look at him with the ball. And that is the one video that, for all the sort of practical application kind of stuff that they try and that they show you, that's the one where you go, wow, there's something in front of this device, and that what it sees has changed the way the conversation goes, and it's so it's not just seeing a dog with a ball, it really is getting into that emotion of what you might be like. So just to caveat all of that, is that functionality isn't yet, the updated version of that isn't yet rolling out. What they've rolled out so far is the kind of more nuts and bolts back end updates to ChatGPT 4 Omni. But even there, like, I don't know what you felt, Doug, you know, when you're using that new updated model, the responses are getting better and better all the time. You know, it's just the leap between 3.5 and 4 as it was pretty notable. And again, I think it's pretty similar again. The thing that I worked out the other day, and I think this is the one where it starts to get like pretty profound if we're really starting to think about what this could mean. I worked out that the context that the newer model can store, if it was a conversation, it'd be able to store and recall 19 hours worth of human conversation. That is off the charts, scary as heck. But also, and that, you know, I think that's like quite a significant upgrade on the previous one. So just the amount of stuff that it can deal with that's unique, you know. So, and of course, the really exciting thing is that none of this now, all of this new stuff, basic access to it, is free. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of this stuff, whereas previously you had to pay for the pro account, which is only $20 a month, but which nothing, but now it's completely free. So you know, literally you can talk to students. Well, you have to talk to students and help them think about these tools ethically. But you can give young people, my daughter, my Daisy, I will shut up in a minute. I'll let you ask another question, but I just, this is what excites me. I did a presentation to a bunch of writers. So like script writers, novel authors, that kind of thing. A couple of weeks ago, it was the weekend and Daisy came with me. And I don't normally drag her along to everything. She came along and sat in the audience. And I gave her this example of one of the really, even before the maths tutor thing, when I was first using ChatGPT-4, and it reminded me, I'm ancient, Doug. Like, I grew up in the 80s, and for me, my first experience of computers was text-based computer games, like literally nothing on screen. And concurrently, I used to read choose your own adventure novels, which would give you the illusion of some control of what was you doing. So these two things, like my 80s kind of thing. So when I first got my hands on ChatGPT-4, one of the stupid things I did was to create a text-based choose your own adventure game via a prompt set in a world of a British sitcom from the 70s called Fawlty Towers.
Love this
show.
Some
of your view.
Yeah. I know that show.
Yeah. And because when I wasn't playing, you know, choose your own adventure games, back in the day, I was probably watching Fawlty Towers. So I put all of that together and it was under one of the first experiments. And I literally could play a choose your own adventure as Basil Fawlty with these many, many mishaps and things. So I used as part of this talk to writers, because obviously what you don't want to say to a bunch of writers is this is a technology that's going to replace you, because it won't, because art is art. And, you know, but I showed this example, it got a laugh. And then we got home that evening, Daisy's on the phone on the lounge downstairs. And I said, what are you doing? 7:30, 8:00. What are you doing on your phone, Daisy? I've followed what you did in your presentation. I said, what do you mean? I said, I've created my own adventure game based on The Hunger Games. And she's banging to, well, then she was into The Hunger Games. Now it's Harry Potter weeks later. But that was the thing where I just go, my God, you know, she's there. She's, as a 12-year-old kid as she is now, immersed in this stuff, taking these daft cues from me. What does the world look like of these young people coming into employment in the next couple of years with that are native? So it's generative AI. That excites me. I'll shut up now.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I was going to say, I'll have to ask you the last question now just to make sure you have enough time to
get sorry. No,
it's great. No, I mean, you hit so many wonderful points there. I haven't really dug into 4.0, the GPT-4 Omni version. And I think we'll see the incremental sort of changes as they roll more stuff out. And I think they've been pretty wise about testing and making sure, like, things don't break. Some of the earlier versions, when things got more popular, of course, things did break a little more often, or the response time was slower, but we're seeing some really great stuff. So I create videos, right? So I've published probably a few dozen videos on ChatGPT or AI related stuff, but I haven't pursued any sort of speaking gigs. And I know there's a lot of folks who have a pretty good level of expertise with experimenting. And, you know, we're not necessarily thinking, hey, you're going to go out and show writers exactly what to do, how to write scripts or whatever.
No.
You're just saying, like, here's a wealth of possibilities. How did you land some of these speaking gigs? And maybe you can give some tips. Because, I mean, the thing is, like, it's abundant, right? Like, we're not going to be competing. Yeah. Like, if you tell us all your secrets,
100%, no.
Like, how are you getting these?
I completely agree, Doug. And I think for anyone listening, unless you're in Manchester, in which case, stop now. No, I don't. I think there's room There's tons of room here. And I think from my point of view, the speaking gigs have kind of come from, God, I don't really like to think of myself as having profile, but in my domain, working with creative, digital, TV, media company, I've got a good network. So it's almost like the day job had prepared me for this pivot, you know. So, you know, I've just been able to go back. Well, not actually go back. Again, it's kind of by doing this stuff and presenting it in a certain way that's landed me workshops and presentations and stuff like that. And then almost spurring, I was like asked to do a session for a college in the UK. First asked me to do some training in, like, it was probably June last year. So like only not long after GPT-4. And it kind of really aligned. It's like, well, you know, I do training anyway. And this is really exciting. You know, like, I could do some training on AI and help inspire other people. And that was it, you know, getting one gig at a college and then a university, we call universities and colleges different, you know. So then I got a gig with a university and then started being approached. I mean, and not in any, there's no big master plan. It's just, I tell you the one thing, Doug, it's just been the content. It's been, and not like we touched on this just before the call. It's like the difference between telling people you're an expert or showing people some cool stuff that you've done. And my thing is let's show people some cool stuff that we've done. Cause then it'll spark some imagination and inspiration and stuff like that, rather than me wagging the finger to say, this is how you use generative AI. And that's, I have fun. Like literally I'm charged up even on this call. And when I'm doing presentations, you know, I'll be focused on strategy, but I'll also be having a lot of like, what does this mean strategically for your organization or the future of your workforce? But I'll be having a lot of fun while I do it. And that is how you get people on board, because I think the challenge we have in this, in doing AI presentations, workshops, etc., is there's a lot of fear out there, isn't there? You know, like loads of people are kind of the message, and I don't know if it's the same in Canada as it is in the UK, but you are in Canada, aren't you?
I was about to say I'm actually in the US, but we're very close, close.
Showing my complete ignorance there. Sorry, Doug. But you know, I guess it's the same. Like the prevailing message outside of our bubble is about AI being bad for jobs, bad for education, it's bad for politics, which I kind of agree with. But the prevailing message is negative, negative, negative. And then you speak to people outside of our bubble, and quite often it's like, oh gosh, you know, AI, no. And, you know, I think sort of that's perhaps why my approach of let's look at some experiments that I've done and then think about how that applies to your business and what these mean for your business is a softly, softly approach, you know. But I do think there's so much scope for people being consultants, being guides, not professing to be the expert because no one is. But the guide, the mentor, everyone always wants the mentor, right? You know, the hero's journey. People want that mentor that's going to help them on their journey, you know. And that's the role, you know. And I think there's huge opportunity in that.
So as we're coming up towards the end, we'll put a pin in all the other stuff that we want to talk about. But you mentioned, you know, speaking to students, your daughter's a student. How do you think, or do you have any thoughts on how students can use AI without cheating? Or, you know, you could take the other position, like as administrators, like how do you foster the capability of AI while still like teaching what you're supposed to. Any ideas?
Yeah. Oh, I tell you what, I think about this so much. And I think it's because, you know, I've done so much in education. I'm not an my wife is a educator. You know, speaks to lots of staff at colleges and universities. And I think the big thing is, right, this is how I see it, right? I did a session for some like 17-year-old students last week. And this stuff right now, you can cheat with your college work. You can cheat. Like you know this already. Like you could cheat. Your college tutor can ask you to do something, and maybe you could just put that into ChatGPT, get it to write it, submit it. There might be a bit of a question mark whether you've used AI or not, but ultimately nothing can be proved, right? So you can cheat. It's fine. Go ahead and cheat. But the problem is you apply that approach the minute you join the world of work. So your boss asks you there was someone on the front row and I kept pointing to her the other day during this presentation. I had to apologize at the end because I was going, you go and do this in your job, you know. But the point being, if you have that same approach and your boss asks you to do a report on X or Y or to do this or that, and all you've ever known is just putting it into a generative AI tool and it spitting out a thing and you presenting that as your own, you are categorically the first person in that line when jobs are being automated, because why do we need this person? Whereas if you're a young person able to integrate this into how you work, that you're not using it to write the thing. Maybe you're using it to think of a structure or to how to take the question, the essay. How do you reframe that in a way? Do I understand that? What does that mean to me? You know, it's those sort of things I really passionately think, because your students can use this, students that can use this as part of doing things better, you know, doing a better job more efficiently, but finding the new solutions, coming into a business and going, why the heck do we do it like that? Can't we automate some of this in an ethical way? That, and you're only going to get that if you apply that to how you work right now. It seemed to get, apart from this poor girl that was pointing at, it seemed to really hit home that message, because like you can just use it to cheat, but you're not going to be able to do that in the world of work without being first out the door. The opportunity, my goodness, like if you and I were, you know, 16, 17 right now, with all of the stuff we know now, with these tools, my God, we'd change the world. You know, and the world of work, the world of the way we do stuff, obviously there's so much alongside that we need to worry about, which is a whole nother like chat. But you know, and that's even before you even start to think about, my big thing at the minute is like, these are the kind of things we can do natively within ChatGPT on a browser or the app. But you can build stuff on the APIs. My God, right? Like I would quite happily speak to, I'm sure they contemplate this already a lot, you know, but if you're a big retailer or a big education online brand, or you're this or you're that, to be now thinking about how do we build the solutions of tomorrow using the APIs, building it on ChatGPT's APIs or whatever else, that the fact that we can plug into this voice stuff and this visual stuff and this, it changes everything. I mean, the whole thing of the web, like how we interface with this is a whole other thing in itself, but we've been used to keywords for 25 years, just as consumers and as the infrastructure that supports that. But like, you know, the minute more of a mainstream audience turns to a tool like ChatGPT, because maybe it's baked into the next version of iOS, which sounds likely, when people do that and don't have to use search engines in the same way, everything we know about how we reach people online change, or big bits of what we, you know, that disruption. And I think that's what's really exciting. We all, you know, if we just cling on to the ways that we, the ways we've done stuff for the last however many years, we'll be at risk of automation. But if we're going, my goodness, what could we do with this stuff now? Then we're creating the future. And that's why I get excited, as you can tell.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much possibility, and we're kind of just, I mean, we're really at the tip of the iceberg, I think, even though it doesn't seem like it, especially when we see all the progress that has been made in the last couple of years. But the competition helps with like Gemini and then like Anthropic, and like there's a couple other players out there doing a lot of big stuff. So we're short on time, so we should probably wrap up here, but we'll schedule something again soon. I'm going to ask you two questions, which is a little sin, but I'm going to rely on you because we got a hard stop. Okay. So what's something that you're excited about that you haven't explored yet? Maybe with Omni, maybe with just like some seed of an idea that you have, but you haven't really developed it. And then the second part is where people can find you. You have a YouTube channel, you have a podcast. I'll give you a chance to mention those if people want to connect with you a little bit more and see what you're working on. So two-parter, first part, what are you excited about?
With Omni, oh my gosh, I cannot wait until the voice and visual stuff rolls out. I'm trying to think of a demo project for it, and I've not quite got there, but I'm thinking of, I've kind of got a background in working in TV, and in TV, everyone's always on the lookout for the next big game show. And I'm not going to say I'm going to create that. What I'm kind of interested to do when those tools drop, how can you create a game show format or a pretend game show format that uses that stuff that I could demo on my desktop and people would go, oh my God, we'd not thought about how we could use this in telly. So that's my, I've been speaking to a few TV folk that I know. So I need to keep on with those conversations, but it's like basically making a desktop pilot just feels like an incredible thing, you know, using the visual and the voice kind of thing, and adding tension in the voice so the quiz master becomes, you know, more animated and what have you. Anyway, so that's my beyond more practical applications of that. And like I say, I think the bigger picture is what people do when they finally realize that the web technologies that we can build on are completely different than the web technology that we use right now. That's the mind blowing bit for me. So yeah, that's that. Where people can find me, I'm on Instagram and X as just Phil Birchnall. So I'm sure you'll put my details in the thingy. I do a podcast. It's for middle-aged men because I am one. So it's kind of about sort of the issues you kind of, practical mental health, those kind of things you go through as you reach middle age, which is called Talking Cod. Yeah, there's a whole story in the name. My YouTube channel is where I put my like AI experiment videos, and that's just Diagonal Thinking. And my website is diagonalthinking.co.
Perfect. Phil, this has been really fun, and we'll get another date on the calendar. We'll link up so people can find more. We'll also link to the Forbes article so people can check that out and just see how simple it was. And I'm glad, you know, you connected after I did a follow-up, because I was like, hey, I was mentioned in Forbes thanks to Phil. So full circle.
I saw the email in your newsletter. I'm like, oh my God, that's a really strange coincidence, because I was in Forbes this weekend as well. And I opened it, I was like, of course, that's what's happening.
Yeah. So yeah. It's you. Thanks Amazing. To you. All right, buddy. Appreciate it. And we'll catch up real soon.
Yeah. Cheers, Doug. Thank you.